lower score.
There's one rule.
We were talking about how I was telling, like, I don't regret. I actually think I'm really, I'll go ahead and boast on myself. I think I'm really unique in the fact that I really don't have many regrets in life. Like, I don't think like that. Yeah. I think that you're tasked with the present and whatever consequences that you have going forward, like, that's where you're at, you know? Like, it's, there's no reason to say, well, my life could have been X. Like, there's just no reason to. And so we were talking about like the ways that we say I can't in today's society, and sometimes the way that society blocks us from understanding that we can in mm-hmm. some ways. And I was telling Scott, I was like, man, I wish I grew up in, like, you know, late 80s, early 90s. Like, I'm contrary to popular belief, what you guys think, I was born in 97, which is crazy. But sometimes it's just hard nowadays to really be confident in what we're doing, and especially with the way that the world kind of tells you that you need to kind of shut up and sit down sometimes.
Yeah.
And sometimes that confidence is not really appreciated in some way, shapes, and forms in different areas.
So I was actually having this conversation with a student over text yesterday. I'm trying to find it, because I think this is one of the most subtle ways, and it happens to people who are, you would call maybe really good people. let's see. I put on here, and particularly for Christians, but it's not just for Christians. I said, I think there's a strange balance for Christians here in that they often feel guilty for wanting to win and beat everyone. Expressing wanting success for others and feeling bad for them when they play bad masquerades as compassion. It sounds like compassion, but it's not. What it really is a defense mechanism to make you feel better when you underperform, so that it doesn't feel as bad when you don't succeed. It's like saying, well, at least our team won, a way to hide from the pain of I lost. Lowering goals protects us from the pain of the fall. Falling down running hurts a whole lot more than falling down crawling. And so, like, we masquerade as compassion, like, oh, I'm so happy for you, you know. And if you're good friends with them, you probably are. But when you have these, you know, I really hope our team does good today, even if I don't. So what you've already done is you've already said I can't. That's really what you're saying. And it's a defense mechanism for, I really want this, and if I play bad, I'm gonna back down a little bit, like I don't care quite as much, and I care about you, and I'm glad you played well. But it's not compassion. It's masquerading as compassion, and it's just a defense mechanism so you don't have to deal with the pain of losing.
I think a lot of people deal with that, and in some facets, so do I. And so I guess...
Me too.
I think we all do, and so I feel like, what do we have to do to overcome that? Like, I know that it's just, this is assuming that you have all the answers here, but, like, what do we have to do to overcome that?
I think one of the first things is, you know, you can't solve a problem if you don't realize there is one. And so I think the first thing that we all have to realize is that we all have an I can't in us. And the question is, you've got to pay attention and or ask somebody around you, like, when I say something that even hints at an I can't, call me out on it. Because you don't realize how pervasive it is. It's like, I really want you to do well, you know. I want to beat you. Like, it's okay for me to want to win. And so watching out for those subtle ways that we say I can't. Or we just spend time around better players and we continue to underperform. And it's like, oh, you know, I can't keep up with those guys. I just like playing with better people. Or you'll play another I can't is you actually play with worse people. I watch people do this to make yourself feel better. It's like, well, why would you do that? Because you don't want to deal with the pain of falling down. We've learned to avoid and run from pain. What's our culture? We'll do anything to not go through pain. That's why we don't go to the gym and work out. That's why there are places like Planet Fitness and strap the thing around your stomach and let it, you just stand there and let it vibrate, you know, like, we don't want to deal with the pain that's required to get better at something.
Yeah. I think it's also harder and easier to deal with some of those things depending on the stage of life that you're in as well.
Mm.
I think that's something that's super important to say as well, because, like, you know, for me being in my early 20s, like, everything is changing around me.
Right.
Everything is changing
people
around me.
Married,
so it's like
relationships are changing.
Yeah. I mean, exactly. So, I mean, like, you kind of have to, like, in some ways, like, I do say that I can't in order to avoid some pain in some areas of my life.
Yep.
That's, I mean, I do that.
Yep.
A million percent. And, like, I feel like golf is actually the only place in my life right now, at least in the stage of life that I am in, along with a few others, but, like, that I actually push myself as hard as I can to feel like I'm doing something.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm sorry if I'm kind of speaking in cryptic.
Yeah.
Some crypticness
speaking
here.
Speaking in tongues
but
over here.
I am speaking in tongues, but, like, yeah, golf is that one place where I actually feel like I can go all out, and I don't feel bad about playing with people who are better than me.
Yeah, and what was I going to say?
Crap, that probably made no sense to the viewers at home. I'm so sorry.
you're good.
Maybe it identifies with some people.
I think this, you know, so you're asking the question, and we're just kind of talking through answers. You know, I don't think I have the solution to every problem. I would be a fool if I had that. But as we dig through these things, we kind of come to some at least good starting points. And the thing that's so hard is to turn towards things that are hard. When you start creating a habit of running, all you do is run. You got to stop running. First thing to do is stop running, plant your feet firmly, and turn around. Turn around and face it and run at it. And, you know, that was what I used to do with when Rebecca and I were in debt. I was like, maybe I can just outwork the problems that are going on in my finances and at home. Maybe I can just outwork them, and maybe I can just do more, and it'll just go away. And it doesn't. And so until the thing finally crashed and burned, and we were way in debt, and I had to turn and face it, and we were lucky to have great people at our church and great friends that helped us turn and face it. And, you know, they asked us to go to dinner. It's like, hey, guys, we can't go to dinner. Like, we're pushing hard on this Dave Ramsey stuff. And, like, I don't have enough money to pay for a $300 emergency if we have one. So I can't pay for pizza. And to tell that to your friends who you've gone out to dinner with so much for the last 5, 6, 7 years is so hard. It hurts. And they're like, hey, it's okay, we'll cover you. It's like, no, you don't have to do this. Like, no, we want to. We know y'all are working hard, and we love you, and we're going to do this. And so they would cover probably twice a month, they would cover us for dinner. But, like, we had to turn and face our own debt.
It's also probably not the most fun thing in the world to have somebody pay for you as well.
Oh, man.
That stage.
Yeah, I mean, we're supposed to be grown adults, and
right.
we've got a, you know, 1.5-year-old son, and we've got a daughter, you know, just like, we have 2 kids. We just had to, you know, we just had our second kid, and all of a sudden the thing comes crashing down. Like, we're supposed to be responsible adults, and we're not. And to turn and tell people we need help, poor man, that sucker hurts. Like, it hurts even thinking back to
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
But that's the, to me, that's the only solution to the I can't, is to turn around to everything that says I can't and just run head at it.
Taking this back to golf a little bit, I think that your whole, there's only one rule, shoot a lower score, that quote means a lot for what you just said. Because, like, I feel like a lot of people do say, I can't, especially when they watch tour players every single week. They're like, I can't hit the ball that far. Oh, I don't have the spin to be able to, you know, yank something back on the green. Oh, I don't, my irons aren't long enough to reach there. It's like, there's only one rule, shoot a lower score. So, like, I mean, speaking of the Arnold Palmer Invitational this past week, you saw Arnie take that driver off the deck from, like, what was it, you know, like 145, 200,
yeah.
You know, it's like,
yeah.
There's only one rule, shoot a lower score. It's like, sometimes it's embarrassing to, you know, pull a hybrid from under 200 mm-hmm. yards or mm-hmm. you know, whatever that means. But sometimes you see these old man pars that run around on Franklin Bridge, and they hit stuff tight with some clubs that you'd be like, why are you pulling that there? And it's like, I guess we're taking it back. Like, there's only one rule: shoot a lower score, and whatever it takes, do that.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And
it might mean you're going to get ridiculed for it.
Yeah.
I mean, look at Bryson. People either love him or hate him right now. It's like, oh, it's so great he hit it that far. Who cares? That's so dumb. He's just doing it for a show. Like, all the negative press with the positive press is off the charts.
Do you see what Fitzpatrick said about DeChambeau?
Uh-uh.
He was criticizing DeChambeau. He was like, he's like, you don't have to hit it that far to, like, you know, shoot these impressive scores.
We'll get your act together, Fitzpatrick. We've had you in a good position the last 2 weeks, and you choked it away. You know, like.
Well, I know, but then Bryson clapped back at him, and he goes, "You know, well, you know, these courses are set up for people who hit the ball like Matthew Fitzpatrick." So, I mean, it's just like, I could be misrepresenting him, but he was like, you know, he was basically saying, like, you know, if you can hit it like Fitzpatrick, you know, but I'm going to play my game, and that's kind of going to be
That's the way it should be. Like, yeah. Phil played his way, Tiger played his way. VJ played his way. Justin Thomas plays his way. Like, there's.
You think about Bubba too. I mean, Bubba was like an early Bryson.
He'll never win anything. Blah blah blah. He's got two green jackets.
Two green jackets, along with other tour wins.
Dude,
talk about hitting a, you know, power slice off the tee and having it land exactly where you want it. Imagine if an amateur
over people like where nobody has ever considered aiming a golf ball.
Like, for everybody who's listening to this, think about that the last time you hit a tee shot and you just absolutely sliced the hell out of it. Like,
or hooked it together if you don't know how to slice it.
Right. Bubba does that, but on purpose, and he hits it close. Like, imagine having that much control over your stuff. A lot of people are like, oh, he's just wild and out of control. It's like, all right.
That's all he does, though, is
you fade
big curves.
You fade it 80 yards and roll it up on the green. Like, it's just.
Here, yeah, you try. And you got to aim it up over them trees over there and hope it comes back.
The lines that he takes are just crazy.
Yeah. And so guys get ridiculed, and that's where you have to believe in what it is that you're doing and trust that. And there's doubts going to fire in from every single angle. Well, if I just do this, if I just do that. You know, there were the year Spieth broke out with his putting. He had that left hand low like he still has. And he was, I think, I may misquote this number, but I believe he was 24 or 25% 24 or 25% from 25 to 30 feet. That's 25 to 30 feet. That's just unheard of.
Yeah.
Ever.
That's one out
and
of
so
four from 30+. Yeah.
In January of the following year, there were over 60 guys on the PGA Tour that tried left hand low. Why are you guys signing up for something else that hasn't worked for you ever? Like, what you guys got here without that? Don't think that just because he does it means that you should sign up and do it.
Yeah.
Just because Bryson's putting on 40 gazillion pounds, this goes back to one of my early episodes. It was like episode 13 or 14. This is where I started the There's One Rule.
Yeah.
And I did a There's One Rule 3 episodes. One was fitness, one was score, and one was some other thing. But like, don't start doing something just because you think you have to.
I mean, chest putters were an epidemic for a while too.
Yeah, and those are gone.
Yeah.
Like, I'm trying the forearm lock putter that Bryson's doing.
Yeah.
I'm having the same specs but in the Srixon Cleveland line.
I mean, I've done
I'm doing it from a teaching standpoint to learn of could this be applicable?
I did the same. I recently did the same thing once Colin Morikawa won 2 weeks ago with the saw grip.
Yeah.
I was like, okay. And that's when I first got introduced to Mark O'Mara and started trying the saw grip. And I realized that, like, the saw grip lets my right hand clear my body better. That way I don't have as much turn.
Yep.
And I can keep my head and my hips in the same place. And I just realized, oh, that actually works for me. And so, like, yeah. I've been staying with that. But I think there's something to be said for trying it out to, you know, to see if it works for you. And there's also something to be, like, trying it out to be like, oh, well, it works for him. Let's see.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
You have to understand how it works with your body in order for it to end up being effective or not.
Well, I think a lot of times when people, so this is an I can't. Oh man, this is great. One of the I can'ts is people will start trying other things because they feel like they can't do what it is they're working on. And really, it just hasn't mattered enough for you to really change it.
Well, also,
in most scenarios,
how much of that is mindset? You know, like how much of that is mindset? No. But what I'm trying to say is like, I feel like there's a difference to be like, oh, I can't do this, so I'm going to do it a different way, versus being like, what if I could do it better this way? Let me try it.
Right.
Like, I think there's a very noticeable difference between those two mindsets.
When people start trying multiple different things, that's when it, like, they won't try something and stay with it. They'll move to the next one. It's the same person who tries the next fitness craze.
Right.
Well, it's like, okay, well, CrossFit will do it. CrossFit won't fix your poor self-image. CrossFit won't fix your laziness and your poor diet. Like, this diet, the keto, won't fix your poor, you know, managing of your own food habits and the reason why you overeat. And like, none of that fixes those problems. Zumba doesn't fix it. Powerlifting doesn't fix it. Sometimes it makes it worse. You just replace one obsession with another, you know? So you're dead on. It is mindset. And when players start running for help, you just watch them fall off. Like,
yeah,
that's what happens. Like, well, what if there's a young man, I won't mention him, that was a student of my former boss, and I've been a part of him. He's a fantastic college player, elite junior, has beat Jordan Spieth in junior tournaments, like won massive tournaments. Well, he decides, after he gets onto the web.com tour, before it was Korn Ferry tour, he had played a fade for 4 years in college. We had worked a fade for 4 years. He decides, coming in January, that he wants to play a draw. Right after he qualifies for the Korn Ferry tour, I feel like I need to play a draw to be able to play out there. And Hank tried to steer him away from that. He's been doing this for over 50 years. He knows what happens when players make a massive change in their dominant shot pattern. Not that he can't hit a draw. He could hit a draw when he wanted to, but as his dominant shot. Well, that year he started to struggle on the tour. Went to another teacher to help him hit the draw. Did okay and then struggled some more and then came back. Still wants to hit the draw, though. Continues to struggle. Now he has zero status. He finished top eight. He finished eighth in the web.com qualifying finals, like in the third round of Q school. And he had won 5 Division I college tournaments.
Could have been a tour like not even a prospect. He could have been a tour spectacle, it feels like.
Yes, he should be. And he may never be. Now, I saw something. He won a small tournament in one of these small coast events, and he made, it was like a $4,000 check. I remember him winning a $250,000 check right when he graduated from college in his first tour. He had a tour sponsor. He finished second by one.
Let me guess, he was playing the fade.
He was playing the fade. Won $250,000. Now he's making $4,000 checks. Like, guys start searching, and that's a lack of self-confidence. And it's trying to chase something because they're being influenced by the world around them.
I mean, we were
and
just
that's
saying...
Hard. That's hard. It's hard to watch because I care about the guy. Like,
right.
He's a... what a talent. Whoa, amazing.
I can't remember if we said this on the podcast or off the podcast, but we were talking about how, the best players... The best tour players... You know, learn how to block everybody out that's around them, kind of thing. It's like, why do you think that a draw, like, if you see a bunch of people draw the ball on the tour, like, why do you care? Like, just hit your shot, kind of thing.
Right.
I mean, look at somebody who plays a fade on tour and wins, like Morikawa.
Mm-hmm.
Like, every single shot of his is a fade. Like, I think it's such a figment of people's imagination to feel like they have to have every single shot in the bag in order for them to be good at golf. Like, it's just not the case. Like, I think there's, and talking about course management, what we talk about on the podcast here, it's like if you just hit your fade in the right places, like there's no reason why you should ever need a draw.
No. You don't have to. No. Just because a hole draws right to left, or it's a, quote, draw pin, that's me doing quotations.
Yeah.
It's a draw pin, doesn't mean you have to hit a draw.
No.
You can hit fades in there. Like, I remember this was... this was probably a year before I wrote my book. I was playing this golf course in just north of Atlanta that we would always go and play at. It's called Big Canoes. It's a big kind of retirement community, but it's got a 27-hole golf course in it. So every Thanksgiving, we go and play. And this golf course kicked my butt every single time. I got tired of it kicking my butt. It's not a long golf course. It's only like 6,600 yards. There's no reason. Like, I'd only broken 80, like, one time.
It's made for the retirement community.
Gosh. It was so annoying. Now, it's kind of built in the woods up in northern part of Georgia. But, like, there's no reason at that length that I shouldn't be able to at least break 80 on a regular basis. And I finally decided one time we went out there. I said, you know what? I don't care what happens. This is before I started using the phrase, there's one rule. It was like, I'm beating this golf course today. I just made up my mind I was going to do it. So I changed the shot selections off the tee, hit some fairway woods. I hit a 6-iron off of the tee one time, but I also tried to drive a green one time. I did things I didn't normally do and went way outside the box. Well, I was just 3-under through 6, and we come to the dreaded par 5 7th, super freaking narrow, water all the way down the right side, this river, and you tee off from way up high in a downhill dogleg left. Well, the trees, the tops of the trees, are, you're looking at them off the tee. And it's like, well, I haven't hit a draw yet today. And this fairway has to take a draw. I was like, no, you know what? I'm going to aim my fade right up over these trees. And I'm going to hit a 3-iron, or I think I hit a 4-iron. 4-iron up over these trees. I'm going to play it as a 3-shot hole. I'm not even trying to get there in 2 like I used to. So I hit this high-cut 4-iron that goes shorter than anybody else in my group. I'm the longest hitter in the group, but it's in the freaking fairway. I play another 4-iron up. It goes left of the green. Chip it up there. Get my 2-putt par. I used to make like 8s on that hole. But that was, you know, like I used to want to blame the swing. I was like, no, just play the shot that you have. But it went against convention. And so, like, when you go against convention or you go against what you're supposed to do, it can destroy your confidence because you're like, well, this isn't what I'm supposed to do.
This isn't
what people tell me to do.
That's such a killer. It's such a killer.
And then you create this habit of, like, doubting any decision that you should make because that one didn't work, even though you did what everybody said you were supposed to do. And so then you create this, oh, man. Well, that feels weird to do that here. So?
That's what I tell myself, too, like, here at Franklin Bridge, is I've told myself ever since I started playing, like, somewhat competitively on this golf course, is I'm like, I will never have a shot here at the course where it's going to be like, well, I usually hit 7 here, so I'm going to hit 7 here.
Yeah.
And I think this is one of my biggest strengths in the game is I didn't come in with all the – you know, the faux pas and all of the stereotypes of golf, right? So, like, I pretty much have your mindset when we're going around the course,
right?
Oh,
gosh, I'm really responsible now.
I know.
I'm better not screw it up.
But, like, I don't go up to a par 3 and be like, I usually hit 6 here, so let me pull the 6. It's like, no, yeah. I'm going to bring the 5, I'm going to bring the 6, and I'm going to bring the 7, and I'm also going to bring my rangefinder, go up to the tee, figure out which one I need to hit, and I'm going to hit that club. Like, I don't care if it's usual. It's that usual club.
Right. And you know what? I might play this hole different. Like, I might decide to hit it way over there.
Right.
There was a hole growing up. It's our first hole. It's a par 5. And if you could hit your drive far enough in the air, you can carry this ravine and be on another level of the fairway. It's not actually a ravine. It's just rough. But it's... if it gets down in there, it's hard to hit it out.
Yeah, it's nasty.
Well, I started realizing in high school that was a hole. I didn't do this anywhere else on the golf course. Can literally hit your driver as hard as you want on that hole. And I realized it's either going to go dead freaking straight, or it's going to go a fair way over to the right, in which you can play over and it works. So that's how I played that hole. Hit as hard as you possibly can. If it goes straight, great. If it doesn't, it's going to be way over. And you can play up that fairway and then play over. Like, it doesn't fit, but it does fit.
Yeah.
It's weird to say that, but there are certain places and certain golf holes where you can do stuff like that. But people really have got to figure out how it is that you need to play and play that way.
I think that's the key takeaway from this podcast, and I feel like it took us a little bit to get there. But
yeah,
And
you're always learning. Always learning.
And the golf course is going to play different every single day. Mm. Like, I think that's like such, like, you're going to be playing on winter grass one day. We're going to have to learn the course again in a few months when the course turns green. Like, it's just going to take some time. And I think the people who are like, well, I usually, you know, play a 7 here. It's like, well, I guarantee you haven't broken par on the course if you have that kind of mindset.
Right.
I'll almost guarantee that. Like, yeah. I will. Like, there's not a golfer who shoots consistently low scores that just pulls what they're used to pulling. Like, the golf course plays different every single day, and if you don't adjust to that,
guess what?
If you usually pull a 7 on a par 3, mm-hmm. I bet you are usually hitting high 80s, low 90s, or more on a golf course every weekend. Like, if that's how you want to play, that's how you want to play. But if you want to get better, you have to learn to play better strategically.
And you have to be willing to look at the game a little bit different.
Yeah.
You know, we're talking about the BPN and the OP. Sorry, we're not going to give out the answer on what those are anymore. But the being able to look at a golf course differently is an important component to getting better.
Yeah.
And being able to go, you know what? What are the traps that I'm in that either I've created for myself or I've had kind of thrust upon me, you know?
Yeah, talking about the I can'ts.
Yeah. Yeah, like the one that it was always told me was never aim a curved shot where a straight one will hurt you. Well, that was the fade that I hit over the tree. It allowed me – I ended up shooting 2 under, made 1 bogey coming in.
Yeah.
At that golf course. But
which is a big step from what you
used to.
Which
was huge. Yeah, yeah. Like, I had only broken 80 one time. I think it was a 79.
And what, did you shoot 70 that day? Yeah.
Well, we only played 9 because of the way the frost delay was.
Okay, so 34.
So I shot 34.
Yeah.
And I hadn't – I mean, that was – five strokes better than I'd ever shot out there on a 9-hole round.
Yeah, just because played it different.
Yeah, because I didn't play it the way I wanted to or the way I was supposed to.
Yeah.
I played it the way I needed to play it in order to play well.
Mm, that's big.
And, like, Zach Johnson won the Masters. Didn't go for a single par 5 and 2. Birdied every single one of them.
Yeah, insane.
But that's the way he had to play. Now, are the chances of him winning lower because he can't go for it? Probably. But he did win the Masters.
Yeah.
Just the shortest hitter on the tour for a long time.
And I think roping this podcast together, especially with our previous podcast, is we got to stop with the I can'ts. We got to stop with this conventional mindset that we've, like, you know, grooved our way of thinking into. We like, and I'm saying this as a hypocrite myself. Like,
yeah, we're both.
I think all of us are in the same boat to some degree. If we want things to change, we got to do it differently than the way we've been doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes a lot of guts to sell out to a different way of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can just muster the strength to do it once fully all the way through, and not care what somebody thinks, like, I think you're going to see some improvements either in your lifestyle or in your golf game, whatever you apply them to.
Well, I heard 2 comments today when you were out there playing. It was, well, man, if you wouldn't aim it to the right, you wouldn't hit it there. I was like, but you don't understand. Like, Jack's stock shot is a slight pull draw.
Yeah.
Like, I know that doesn't fit convention.
Right.
But there were guys on the PGA Tour back in the old school days that were world-class players that played with a little pull.
Yeah.
That doesn't match convention. Well, if you want to hit a draw, it needs to start to the right of the target and curve back.
Yeah.
Well, you could still get to start to the right. You just going to have to aim over there. But it's not going to start right of your aim as is traditionally taught.
Right.
So, like, and you'll get that, like, hey, man, why are you aiming over there?
Yeah.
You're gonna get that, and it's gonna put that little hinge of doubt in you of like, well, maybe I should. No, you got to stick with your plan.
Yep.
That's hard to do.
It is.
Heckling, heckling, heckling.
I feel like the moral of this podcast, to wrap it up here, is just sell out to the way that you want to live, whether that's on the golf course or whether that's in life. Sell out to the way you want to live, and I think you might like where you're going. And it might, you might be a lot happier where you go as well.
Be willing to learn.
Yeah, there you go.
Always be willing to learn.
Nice little wrap up here from inside the pro shop here at Franklin Bridge. It's been Scott and Jack. We'll see you on the next one. Peace.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to the Champions Playbook podcast. Trying to get you to shoot lower scores. The first step to do that, go buy a copy of my book on Amazon, The Champions Playbook, Thinking Your Way to Lower Scores. And no, it's not what you think. You're actually going to think before you hit the shot, not while you're hitting the shot. Well, and I'll also say this. Go check me out on Instagram, at shassygolf. That's two S's, two E's. Shassygolf. I've got all sorts of free content on there. I've got Student of the Week. I'll let you know when all my podcasts are coming available. So go check it out. And I'm here to help you do that very one thing. Shoot a lower score.